Blog Talk Radio.
I'm looking for a reason, roaming through the night to find my place in this world, my place in this world.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Well, hello out there in internet land. This is John Stanko, your host. And just as I was going on the air, my Firefox upgraded and turned everything off. But fortunately, it doesn't disconnect the phone call. So we are getting back to where we need to be. Nothing is as it should be here. That is so funny. It just, of all times for it to restart would be the time when it's not even showing my, oh, there we go. Now we're coming back. It's showing my phone call. And anyway, you don't need to know any of this. This is, as long as you're hearing my voice, we are in good shape. And I trust that my guest is going to be joining us any moment. And she is writing me. So let me just send the number here. All right, so there we go. There we go. So I sent it to her. So anyway, you know, these technical things, this is just all part of the life of a person in media. And I'm just so glad you joined in. Please hang in there. Of course, if you're listening to this later, this is totally irrelevant. But I have my just a real soul partner in Helen Jackson. I've titled it Dynamic Woman with a Multifaceted Ministry. I was just jotting down some things. On Monday, we had Dr. Jones, and of course, Sister Helen sings in the chorale that he leads, and she's the director, executive director for the Center for Urban Biblical Ministry. She is the co-pastor of a church with her husband. She's an author, and she's just a lot of fun. And so I do see that she has called in. She's waiting in the wings. So we will see. Everything came together. We had a few glitches, but everything came together, as it always does. And it was just so funny that my software, my program would upgrade right at the moment that we were going to get started. Just did Facebook Live, and I thought I had a good session. Of course, what do I know? I mean, I'm going to think it's good. I'm the one delivering it. People on the other end could be thinking, this is stupid. You know, this is why am I wasting my time? And click, and then they are no longer wasting it. But you know, I felt in March, and I've told you this before on previous shows, that I just read how certain people during crisis would take more to media to encourage those listeners that chose to connect with them. And that's what I tried to do in March, and I'm pushing 70 shows now, and each one of them have been so informative and inspiring from a purpose point of view. And today's is going to be no exception. You are going to learn a lot from Helen Jackson. You're going to be inspired, and you're going to see why we have connected at the hip as we have. I was sharing on Facebook Live that I finished my Changing the Way We Do Church manuscript this morning. I went through it twice, and I'm done. Well, I'm not done. I'm done with this part. Now I will send it off to layout. Layout will send it back to me with some font samples. We're working on a cover. We have to do back cover copy that helps promote the book. And then once all that's laid out, then I will read it another time and make sure all the fonts line up and all the margins. And then we will put it together, and then we'll order a proof. And I say, usually, a lot of times on my books, I don't order a proof, because, you know, they are what they are. I'm pretty confident they're in good shape. But this one I'll want to take a look at and see what it looks like. And then once I approve the proof, then we send it to Amazon, and we wait a couple of days, and then they send us a notice that it is live. It is listed. And this time I'm not going to release it till I have both the Kindle and the paper done. A lot of times I'll release the paper and wait for the Kindle to catch up, but I want to launch it in a proper way, and so I'm going to wait for both of those versions to be ready. And why am I sharing this with you? Because some of you may be thinking about publishing and or writing a book, and I always want to give you a perspective on an overview of what it's like to do it. It's not part of the heavenly Jerusalem. It does not fall from the sky. It takes work. It takes concerted effort. Many times along the way, you want to give up. I should have rewritten this a year ago. But, you know, it would have been incomplete without the pandemic. So I'm not excusing my. I know why I didn't write it. I was afraid. This is challenging the way we think about church, which I think has to happen, and I think is part of the God's intention during the pandemic is for us just to step back and think about who we are and why we do what we do in ministry. So, you know, I probably would have been looking at revising it again. So God did use my fear, but I still had the fear lingering, and over the last month just determined I'm going to press through, and I'm going to get this done. Also interesting, while I was writing it, the temptation to edit while you're writing is so strong. I just have to keep note. Did I say this before? It doesn't matter. Keep writing. This is too long. Keep writing. I don't think this makes sense. Keep writing. And then you go back. It's like pouring concrete. Then you go back and you smooth it out. And I have to admit, while I was writing and while I was going through it this last time, thinking, you know, where I was fighting myself, this needs work, it needed a little bit of work, but it wasn't as bad as I was making it. Anyway, I'm glad that's on its way out. I also posted this morning all the other projects I'm working on because progress is important to me. It's one of my motivators. It's one of the things Helen and I learned in the MSOL program, that progress is an intrinsic motivator for many people. It drives us from within. And so I have to see my progress so that I can stay encouraged to continue to do what is before me to do. Well, before we bring Helen Jackson on, I want to continue on with our tradition of a psalm at the start of the program, but this is no ordinary psalm. This is Psalm 119 with 176 verses, so we are not reading the whole thing, or else we wouldn't have time for Helen. So we have been taking it two stanzas at a time, and stanzas because this is written as it will have a letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and then it writes 8 or 9 verses, then the next letter in 8 or 9 verses. So we're not getting into the Hebrew, but we are taking it section by section. So today we pick it up at verse 89, which says, "Your word, Lord, is eternal. It stands firm in the heavens. Your faithfulness continues through all generations. You establish the earth, and it endures. Your laws endure to this day, for all things serve you. If your law had not been my delight, I would have perished in my affliction. I will never forget your precepts, for by them you have preserved my life. Save me, for I am yours. I will speak of your statutes before kings and will not be put to shame. For I delight in your commands because I love them. I reach out for your commands, which I love, that I may meditate on your decrees. The wicked are waiting to destroy you, to destroy me, but I will ponder your statutes. To all perfection I see a limit, but your commands are boundless. Oh, how I love your law. I meditate on it all day long. Your commands are always with me and make me wiser than my enemies. I have more insight than all my teachers, for I meditate on your statutes. I have more understanding than the elders, for I obey your precepts. I have kept my feet from every evil path, so that I might obey your word. I have not departed from your laws, for you yourself have taught me. How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. I gain understanding from your precepts. Therefore, I hate every wrong path." I got to make a confession. When I turned the page, I was reading to a previous some verses 48, 40, 46, 47, and 48. So if you follow along in the Bible, you're going to see some extra ones before I realized what I did. But we got back on track and we started in verse 89, and today we ended in verse 104. All right, enough of all that. It is, without further ado, it is time to bring my friend and colleague on, Helen Jackson. Helen, welcome to Wake Up to Purpose.
Hey, Dr. John, nice to be with you, and thank you for having me.
Oh, gosh, thank you for taking the time. I know you're busier than a one-arm paper hanger with measles, so thank you for your time. You know, this is your time, but on Monday we had Dr. Herbert Jones on, and he is the founder and director of the Heritage Gospel Chorale of Pittsburgh. You sing in that chorale, don't you? And if so, what's that experience been like for you?
Oh, my. So... well, you know, just a way to express through music and song, and both of us know what that means, how important that is, right? Just a way to express the goodness of God, and it's so interesting that you were reading Psalm 119. We do a piece of that. We do some of that. As you know, that it is sacral choral music and hymns. Is the emphasis there? So just rewarding every audience has been in awe of how God's how God reaches out through that form.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, now let me say this, while you were giving the great accolades to my friend and colleague, Dr. Jones, he is a taskmaster by way of choral director. So that's why I'm really being very articulate as I respond to that question, because he is the choral director, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but oh my, just fills our heart with joy in every audience. And if you get a chance, please come out and hear us, or go to the website. We have some music online.
Now, he was talking about a virtual concert coming up. Are you going to be a part of that?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay. So I know, you know, with your schedule, I was, you know, I would not have been surprised if you say no, but that's so good to hear. And anyway, enough of that. We want to talk about you. Let's just start at current events. You and I met through the Center for Urban Biblical Ministry when I think you were a student and I was an instructor. This is a program in partnership with Geneva College that offers degrees to non-traditional students, adults who are coming back to school to after some life experience to earn degrees. Talk to us about CUBM, about your role there, and we'll examine the pandemic and new programs. But just talk to us about CUBM, what it's meant to you, and what you're doing now.
So, thank you so much for that. I couldn't have done that better as a recruiter, so I may have to ask you to come on as recruiter now. So certainly for those of you out there in Radio Land that does not know this, the reason that I am here is because of our host today in the person of Dr. John Stanko, who is the first person that taught me, put me in coach, and what that looks like and what it means. I agree wholeheartedly with progress being the intrinsic motivator. Every day it's how I thrive. By progress, and then I'm compelled to go on to the next progression. So CUBM right now is down in enrollment, as all universities and colleges are across our nation right now, but we are holding on to this great program that says, if you're the person that says, put me in coach, then we're the institution for you. Particularly if you're coming back after going through one career, and maybe you've earned a undergraduate degree, but you never went on to the next level. In other words, you feel that intrinsic motivation, but you've not acted on it. Some of what you talked about earlier, Dr. John, in that piece where, am I doing it right? Am I saying it right? Did I write it right? Should I go over? Mm-hmm. This is where you straighten. CUBM is the kind of institution where you get all of that leveled out for you. You're able to see it played out for you, and you're able then to go back, I think, and achieve. Here I am in a second career after having retired from Allegheny County government for over 30 years of service, to come into this position now and be able to do well is because of these things that we've talked about. So that's where CUDM is. We're holding summer classes, and we are ready for fall.
Yeah, yeah. And doing most of it online or some of it face-to-face?
Both, both. We're doing the hybrid model, and so both our summer sessions were online, and we did some virtual classes, but we are preparing to come back face-to-face here the week of August 17th. We'll be starting fall semester. We are preparing to come back face-to-face, but we are prepared both ways. If we should spike or anything happens, then we will follow the guidelines, of course, and we are prepared to go back online by way of Zoom and those mediums, all of those nice things that we have.
Yeah. Walk us through your progression with CUBM. I mean, student to executive director and everything in between. Just, you know, so somebody listening saying, oh, I don't think I can come back to school. You know, I'm too busy or it's too late in life or whatever. Just talk about your progress, your journey.
So the whole thing, Dr. John, I may need part two of this book to kind of cover all of
to
that.
To be continued.
But, to be continued, and I'll be back next week. But, yeah, from student, so when I came back, I did have all of those things that everyone says, can I do it, can I achieve it? But I will say this, though, oh, man, you really set me on fire, as you always do, when you talked about that progressive intrinsic motivator. If you're that person, then you never slow down, you never die down, you're always trying to achieve the next level. And so if you're that person, right, from student, I saw myself in the kingdom of God being fruitful. But what did that mean, to bear fruit? And so that's the questions I had, and the leadership degree certainly satisfied that appetite in by way of what are the things that you need to do. And it's always, right, it's always doing something. How can I feed the poor? How can I give a glass of water to the thirsty? See, it's always that thought. So even from a student, I was saying, what's next? Nonprofit, should I have my – it wasn't should I have my own nonprofit. It is when should I pursue the nonprofit? How do I do it? And I'm ready to do it now. And so it's that kind of thinking, student on to, now, I did not see myself as the executive director. You know, I saw myself working alongside the director and you, of course, in building this great institution, taking this great institution to the next level, which when we talk about some new programs, we do have some we have vision in line for CUBM, because I think it's time, again, to move it next progressively, just as I did personally. But, yeah, from a student on, you know, you study hard as you do. You know, and can I write papers? Yes, you can write. Yes, you can write, write. And, Dr. John, let me just say, we've kept a lot of your materials in the curriculum, and I will do so as long as I'm here, because I think it helps people understand the importance of writing. Once you start, you can't stop. And the way you do it is, and certainly you want to write it down, so you want to leave something for generations to come. And in all of your writing, you have done that and achieved that well. Thank you, Dr.
I'm honored. I'm honored. Well, you know, I was a part of CUBM for 20-plus years, so you make a lot of relationships and a lot of friends. But let's go back. Again, I want to be specific here. You come back. I know it's not polite to ask a lady her age, and I'm not going to do you that, but how old were you when you came back to school?
Well, let's say this. I had been out of high school at that time since the early 70s.
Okay.
And so I had already done a career, achieved a career, had had many birthdays. and so, I had been out for a long time.
And you came back when? Approximately
came
what
back,
year?
Yeah, the 2000s.
Okay.
I came back to education a little earlier than that, but I think I came to CUBM in the early 2000s.
And you earned what at CUBM?
I earned an associate's degree in Christian ministry, because at that time I was so just, oh, my goodness, I knew I was going to go to seminary and be this great preacher, missionary. Oh, my goodness, I'm going to seminary, and that's not what God said. So, but I did earn my undergrad in Christian ministry.
And you were coming to school, what, one, two nights a week?
So when I first started, I started back with taking one class, which is what we said, I'm just going to take one to see if I can do it. All right, so I took one class, and then the following semester I came back part-time. Actually, I took two classes and eventually full-time.
So you finish your associate degree. What do you do then?
So then I entered the bachelor's program, and at that time it was called Degree Completion Program, DCP, and completed that in community ministry. And then after completing that, went on to master's program, which is the MSOL that Dr. John so fondly speaks of that he taught and earned a master's degree.
Yeah. What was that like?
So the master's degree in organizational leadership actually prepared me best for the role that I am now in. And that is just looking at, all of those leadership qualities, good and bad. We all, as leaders, we house both, and we need to be. But we need to be aware of them so that we know how to do better in the things that we're good at, and also how to handle the things that we're bad at. Because you don't get rid of it, but you are able to bring it under submission if you have the right tools, and that's what the organizational leadership degree does for you.
Yeah, well, it was about a 2-year program, right?
Yeah, if you come, about a 2-year program, could be a little longer, but
about 2. All right, so now you finish the MSOL program and you retire, or what do you do?
Well, originally I went home and started watching Lifetime, but it didn't last long, and because I started getting calls from people like Dr. John, who says, "Can you think you could come down and help out for a couple hours a week?" And just make some phone calls, recruit, some of the relationships. There's nothing better than relationship, right? The relationships that you make. And so I did that. I did come a couple hours a week and just begin to reach out and tell people about my wonderful experience here at CUBM. And it's a family. It's warm. We pray for each other, study together. We help each other. I mean, it is the whole idea of family coming together. And so I did come in to recruit for a while, and we did well. The Lord blessed us with some fruitful semesters together. And then after we completed those things, of course, our director at that time, which many of you know out there, is Carla Threadgill Bird, who had served the institution for well over 20-plus years as well, was looking toward retiring, and then we began to have those conversations about what the next level for CUBM might look like.
Yeah, but you got involved in another aspect of CUBM under my prompting. Tell us about that.
Would that be the teaching?
Yes.
Yeah, sitting at the back table, yeah. So, so for those of you out there that have these thoughts, I always wanted to what? What follows that for you?
Mm-hmm.
For me, I always wanted to teach is what followed. But I wasn't sharing that with everyone because I just thought, who wants to be laughed at, right? If I tell someone this, they're going to laugh. And, of course, as Dr. John so eloquently pointed out, I've had a lot of birthdays. So people were saying, don't you think you're too old to do that now? And so, but the answer to that is no. And so sitting at the back table in many of Dr. John's classes and just listening and watching him teach, I was so inspired and motivated to want to teach people, to helping them to achieve and helping them to move into where God would have them to serve. Purpose. Right?
Yeah.
And so Dr. John was humble enough and kind enough to allow me to co-teach a class with him, which was both exhilarating and frightening at the same time. every class I had both of those emotions going because I knew I was being critiqued, but I was also thrilled to be in front of God's people teaching them. And, boy, he did bless us every class we met. He met us there, and we did well.
Yeah, it was you. You're just outstanding at what you do. What did you teach? Tell our listeners what'd you cut your teeth on.
So in the leadership tract, which Dr. John put together for us, I did professional development, which I love, and did some personal development. But my big class out of that leadership tract was ethics. I know that's
mm-hmm.
where he's leading me, right? Who knew,
mm-hmm.
right? Who knew that
mm-hmm.
I would absolutely love ethics, the
mm-hmm.
philosophy side of it, but we also have a leadership ethics. That kind
mm-hmm.
of looks at it a little differently than the philosophers. We add some of that, but looks at it from a leadership perspective. And I just absolutely
mm-hmm.
love that class, right? Meeting Ethical Challenges and Northouse and Joseph Ross, 21st
mm-hmm.
Century Leadership, and Blind Spots. How about
yeah.
Blind Spots,
yep.
right?
Yep.
A scotoma,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, looking at scotoma. What could stop you from seeing things that is it there and you missed it? Dr. John, no one can teach just like him with the whole story of Hagar and you know, what was it always there and she missed it, or did God
mm-hmm.
create it? Right?
Yeah.
So
and you know, and in teaching ethics, you know, what I've found is, and I think you found it too, people say, what's the, you know, you just do what's in the Bible. I mean, you know, what are we gonna study here? You know, what are we gonna look at?
Right.
But once you get into it, you realize it's a whole process. You realize that some situations are not cut and dry as they would, you know, and you need to reflect on them. You need to have a system. You need to have dialogue. Some people may see it from a little different perspective, and you know, some people believe if it's illegal, then it's ethical, and that may not be. I mean, it's legal to pollute, but you know, is it ethical to pollute? And you just took that and took it to, and we learned it and taught it at a graduate level. You took it and made it very palatable and accessible to undergraduates, and of course they loved you for it. And I think they were all surprised, like many of our graduate students, that you know, there was more to ethics than just do the right thing. It was a very often a process that people had to put a situation through to come to a conclusion. Are you teaching now, or are your directorly duties keeping you from the from the classroom?
Yeah, the director duties are certainly doing that. I do plan to be back in the classroom just as soon as I can. Every semester I look at what I could do. But we do have great vision for the school, and I would like to get it to that place before I go back in. But I am thinking about it every day. I really miss it, and I love to teach. And so I would like to add, when you were talking about that process, we do the seven-step model,
mm-hmm.
and I have had some students come back and say, I applied this to my everyday life. Once I learned
mm-hmm.
it, but you're
mm-hmm.
right, they looked at it at first and said, why do I even need this? But once
mm-hmm.
I learned it, I now go back to the seven steps. So ultimately, you must make a decision. And that's what
mm-hmm.
I think oftentimes we don't do, so, you know, things stay open-ended and causes problems for you.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'd love to teach again.
Well, we need you, and I just want to say to our listeners, if you go to the homepage for this show, the Center for Urban Biblical Ministry is highlighted, which just means if you click on that, it will take you to their website, and you can find out more about their degree programs, their partnership with Geneva College, you know, how to get in touch with them, how to set up an appointment to talk with Helen, and I, again, am very familiar with CUBM. I taught for 20-plus years, and it was, you know, Helen, until people have attended one of our graduations, they really won't understand why it's so special, because there
right.
we saw the generations come together to celebrate
right.
the accomplishment of somebody who, after they had lived a full life, decided to go back to school and get a degree. And I think graduations were always a special time for you too, weren't they?
Yeah, and I have to admit, even right here, and she probably will listen to this and laugh, Carla always cried, and I'd be going, oh, my goodness, she's going to cry again. But
mm-hmm.
on this last one, we did a COVID graduation this year.
Mm-hmm.
We graduated five students, and, of course, we all had on masks. and gloves and all of that. And we had to social distance, and we had to do the whole ceremony that way, and we took pictures that way. And it was overwhelming. Again, as you said, the generations, even grandchildren coming to see grandparents graduate. It is actually very rewarding. And you're right, every graduation shows you, or at least we leave something for the next generation to see and to actually be a part of.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if this were your full-time position, which it is, but I mean, if this was your only position, we would certainly understand. But, of course, not Helen Jackson. She will go and take on other responsibilities. And you and your husband pastor a church. Talk to us about Webster Avenue.
So we're Webster Avenue Christian and Missionary Alliance Church, located in the Hill District of Pittsburgh, just a stone's throw from downtown Pittsburgh, in One Direction, and a housing project just filled with God's people ready to be served sitting behind us. And one of the things that we are doing during the time of COVID is we are feeding or giving out lunches. Bag lunches, box lunches, some people say, bag lunches. Every Sunday, we begin at 1 o'clock, and we have between 100 and 200 bag lunches every Sunday, and we give them out until they're gone. And, the lunch is just, it's a sandwich and a side dish, maybe some chips sometimes and cookies and something to drink. And we give those out. And so that's the new ministry called WACMA Cares. And we certainly do care about God's people in the community in which we are called to serve. So that's the new,
Yeah, it's so exciting because in my own life in the last 10 years, I have spoken very often that, I haven't done a little because I couldn't do a lot. You know, because I couldn't give $100, I wouldn't give 50. Because I couldn't give 50, I wouldn't give 20. And I love this project because you could easily say, well, this isn't a hot cooked meal, or this isn't. But you're taking what you can do in the confines of budget and facilities and manpower, and you're doing something. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you're seeing God breathe on it and bless it. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We have some of our sister churches have jumped on to help us, not to pray for us, of course, but they're sending donations. One of our sister churches ordered a tent for us and is having it delivered. Oh, my God, what's such a blessing for that. And we have people that are just, as I said, donating whatever, any donation helps. We buy bags, we buy forks, that kind of stuff, right? And I can just see this growing even beyond COVID. If we get to that point, we will continue to feed on Sundays. And so, God has breathed on it. It is blessed.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that because I posted something yesterday that said, churches, if what you're doing you don't intend to continue once the all clear is given, then you don't understand the part of the reason why this season came. And that is to help us institute new ways of ministry, new ways of thinking about who we are and what it is that God wants us to do. So I'm so glad you just said, for me, the magic words that, hey, if we can touch 100 to 200 people on Sunday, why would we stop doing that when the whistle blows and we can go back to church? And I think you're thinking like that. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. That is absolutely. And I mean, I feel the same way, Dr. John. Here, again, WACMA Cares forever because God loves us forever. And I think that's where he's trying to get us to go and see, move beyond. He's saying that move beyond the four walls and do ministry. What does ministry look like? I think it looks like feeding God's people forever.
Yeah.
You know, you can't feed enough, you can't give enough water, you can't give, so as you said, it's not the amount of money. If God breathes on it, it will grow and be prosperous.
Yeah, yeah. And so how's the church been doing during the pandemic? I'm sure, are you doing online? Are you doing some face to face?
Let me say this, Dr. Joyner, you hit on it perfectly. There were There was one broadcast that we looked, we had reached over 2,000 people. We're not reaching 2,000 people on a Sunday to Sunday, face to face.
Right.
So God is breathing and blessing ministry by way of Facebook. And we all use this language. God will take what's meant for evil and turn it around for good. And we all, so for those of us that thought Facebook was evil, God has used that forum and for and has grown. I think some pastors that were a little apprehensive but are doing well, not because he's my pastor but because or my husband, but because he's my pastor as well. Pastor Jack is doing very well. So we have reached over 2,000 people. People have come back to us inbox and given their lives to Christ on the broadcast. So that's wonderful. And so we've also put in the starting a prayer line, chain prayer line at the church as well. You can call the church for prayer if you gave your life and call back and team up with prayer partners to pray you through and to get you prepared for a Bible-believing church when it's time to go back, if and when it's time to go back.
Yeah, and again, you raise such an interesting point, an aspect of this. You said people call in. Now, 50 years ago, you know, the phone was a novelty, you know, and some people refused to get one. You know, they didn't want the interruption. They didn't, you know, they didn't want the expense. And so Bell Telephone was actually marketing with the phrase, the next best thing to being there. And now I hear the same things with some people with social media. You know, I can't be bothered. I don't want the invasion of my privacy. But it's no different than the telephone. It's just another form of technology. And anything new technological that comes up in our lifetime, we tend to consider technology. But anything that was already here, we may not consider technology. So people may not, my point is, people may not think of the phone as technology, but it is. And you're using the phone, you are using social media. Nobody's saying this will ever replace the church, but like the Bell Telephone said, it's the next best thing to being there. And we are seeing God use it and bless it. And again, the lesson is not to abandon that when the whistle blows and the all clear is given, but to incorporate that as an important part of our ministry. And so it sounds like you're doing that.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you on every point there. We do have to be prepared to hear what God is saying, and the mandate given by the government we adhere to. What is the mandate given by God in this day? While it's so poignant that you would read Psalm 119 during this. Because, I mean, what is he saying? And you're right. I can remember when my mother, you know, cell phones were coming out, and they were all saying, there's no way I want a cell phone. And remember, you hold it to your ear and you stayed on it all day, you were going to catch something. I mean, it was just...
Yep. The brain waves were going to get your brain. Yep.
They're going to get your brain, right.
And people said, I don't want to be that close to my phone. But then when their car broke down, they would went to somebody who had a cell phone and, you know, and said, can you call for me? So, but again, now we don't even think about that. And you know, I want to talk about your book and another aspect of ministry that you and your husband do, but in the marriage ministry. But you really, I give you credit for popularizing and even solidifying in my own mind the "put me in, coach" phrase. We would use it. You would use it very often when we would have staff meetings and in classes and faculty meetings. What was that saying for you? Why did you latch onto it and use it as naturally as you did?
And I can still hear it for the first time. Oh my God, it was so. I mean, it just came alive for me. And then I could begin to say it in every area of my life where I had some apprehension. Put me in, coach, for me. Now, since you taught it, now coach is God. And if you're looking at it from that perspective, then he is responsible for all things, the success of it and the failure of it. I'm not. So now if I put that where it belongs and I say to him, God, you're my coach. You put
mm-hmm.
me in, you're in control.
Mm-hmm.
If this thing is
mm-hmm.
going to do well, I'm going to swing and I'm going to hit it for the fence. If
mm-hmm.
it's going to do poorly, then that's what you intended
mm-hmm.
to happen. So
mm-hmm.
it takes so much pressure off of you. So I just became, every aspect was put me in, coach, just show me which way to go and I'll go. And when I get there, you're going to say what needs to be said.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to, you know, and you've already equipped me with this very exhilarating personality, which I could,
mm-hmm.
you know, talk to anyone at any time. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And so once, when you latch onto that, then it works in every area of your life,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not confined. It doesn't keep
mm-hmm.
you, boxed in, right? It is in wherever I'll go, whatever I need to say, if I'm feeding people, if I'm needing to pick
mm-hmm.
people up and drive me, whatever I need to do, just put
mm-hmm.
me in, coach.
Yeah.
Right? And
So
I'd love this. This needs to be everywhere all over the world. Put me
mm-hmm.
in, coach. You mind? And I could see it going there.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is a it's obviously we borrow it from the world of sports, but every player wants to play. I mean, you know, and sometimes we've seen, you know, like movies where, you know, the coach didn't know what to do and somebody comes forward and says, "Coach, I'm ready. Coach, I can help the team here. I think I know my capabilities." Now, people can have an inflated view and they could be wrong, but again, when God infuses that capability with the presence of his spirit, now you've unlocked a whole new dynamic. You have two people and not one. You have synergy working. So David, when he saw Goliath, said, "Put me in, coach. You know, put me. I can handle it. God is with me. I've learned that." And this guy's no different than a bear or a lion that I've also taken care of. And so when I published the book about 5-6 months ago, I was looking for a byline to go with that phrase, "Put me in, coach," and I decided on living a bold life. That summarizes what I want that phrase to say. Put me in, coach. I'm living a bold life. And of course, we've seen this at CUBM, haven't we, where students come in but they're tentative, they're afraid, even potential students, they're not saying, "Put me in, coach." They're saying, "I'm not ready." And it's very sad, isn't it?
Oh, yes it is. Because once they catch on to this, it's the reason why you have lost some time. We will
mm-hmm.
admit to that. However, it's recoverable.
Mm-hmm.
It's recoverable. See, if you're losing the game, but you're ready, I mean, you're down, right, and there's only, you know, so many minutes left or so many seconds left. This has to be done now. If
mm-hmm.
if you get in the game, put me in, coach, I'm throwing the touchdown. Guess
mm-hmm.
what? The whole game has changed.
Yep.
So that's what we teach. Yeah, you come in that way, but it doesn't matter where you really are in life. Once you're in the game and you're able to do it, your legs become faster. Your ability catches up with
mm-hmm.
what you need to do. It's there anyway, right? You're able to throw all the way to home plate or all those
mm-hmm.
sports things come right into play, right?
Yeah, indeed.
And guess what?
And sometimes
things are created. Plays are created for you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Such as me in the executive director's position, which I think is just. I don't
mm-hmm.
even know what to say. I have no words to say.
But you were there, and you said, "Put me in, coach. Put me in,
put
coach.
Me in
if
coach.
You want me to be an instructor, put me in, coach. You want me to be a recruiter, put me in, coach. If you want me to be a student." But you had to take the steps. It was a partnership. And so for my birthday this year, somebody got me a mug that says, "Put me in, coach." Somebody got me a T-shirt that says, "Put me in, coach." So I use it all the time on Facebook. But I every chance I get, I give credit to you, the person who really solidified it in my mind that this was a legitimate prayer, a legitimate phrase that was consistent with how God would want us to act and who he would want us to be. Helen, we've got about 14, 15 minutes left, and again, we could end it here and say thank you for all you do for God's people, but there's another aspect, and you and your husband pioneered something a few years ago that led to a book, and talk to us about what that was and what that is and why you got so involved there.
So we did write a book, and of course, again, through relationship and just much love and belief in us was Dr. John Stanko and Urban Press, which, you know, we highly recommend for people to tell me, oh, I would love to do this, but I don't have a publisher and I don't know a publisher. Well, Dr. John Stanko is a publisher, and Urban Press is willing and ready and able to meet and talk with you even today, I'm sure. And So the Modern Couple, when we talked about the Marriage Works program, was a program that was here at CUBM. When we came, We really didn't know too much about it. I believe it was lying dormant. There were classes at that time that were partnered with Together Pittsburgh. And So we took the class, and to be quite honest with our listeners, I took the class because I needed one credit, and I just wanted to take something that was really easy. I didn't have to do too much work or think about it, and I could be out. But again, as the coach does when you ask to be put in, when you get into something, it opened up and evolved into something else. And our love for people, relationship, and marriages, which we believe is God-ordained, and my husband actually loves this field. No, I like to do it. He loves to do it. And that is to counsel and to facilitate marriage groups. And so we begin to do it at our church. The Marriage Works for the Better. And out of that was born the book, The Modern Couple, which is on Amazon. And so we brought groups. We did pastor sessions, and we did levels of leadership, the deacons and elders and their wives to come together, and lay people alike. Dr. John always laughed because one thing that I love to do is feed people. And if you have not met me, when you meet me and see my son, you will definitely know I love to feed people. So myself included. So here we are. So Dr. John would say, okay, this was the bill from feeding people. Yes, you did have a nice dinner. And we always did, right? But we do believe in that. The breaking of bread or sitting around the table sometime, as families do, and just eat and talk things through, that you're able to come to some sound decisions. And so we taught classes and facilitated classes and then had a nice meal together. And let me say this to you. I would not say their names without their permission, but we did have one couple that comes to mind that were on the verge of divorce. But because of relationship, they agreed to do the program, and by the end of the program, they agreed to stay together, and they are together today.
Praise the Lord.
So that praise the Lord. That was one of the things that came out of that. So The Modern Couple is the book.
I know
practical
you're so
ways.
And
I'm sorry.
I know that you're so busy now. Are you doing anything in the way of virtual, training or marriage seminars or any plans for the future?
So we do have plans. As a matter of fact, Jack and I were talking about that. Again, as he has gotten better and more familiar now with this virtual doing church this way, and Zoom, we have talked about doing some marriage things that way. And I think, and we talked about the pastor's corner, kind of a two-minute marriage talk from Pastor Jack. So that's what we've been building up, and I think that could work. For people to come on and do some things like that. So that's thank you for mentioning it and speaking life into it. That is something that we definitely have been talking about, and now I feel like here we are. Put me in, Coach. Let's begin to do some of that stuff.
During this season, I've done my online creativity class. That went 6 weeks and had about 22 students in two classes. Now, tonight, I have my third start of a purpose class online, and I'll have about a dozen students. Between all three classes, I think I have about 40 students. And, Helen, the power of it is so... it's surprising at how it is capable for people to connect, around a common theme. And I've got people from different nations. And, of course, they're there because they want to talk about purpose. But my point is, when you do this online, the two of you, again, you could be touching couples in Africa. You could be touching couples in England. And it's no harder to do than if you're touching couples in the Hill District. And so I just encourage you to, you know, to move forward, to do it, to learn. Takeaway for me, I've been doing 90-minute classes, and I've been going over. So what I think I'm going to do is offer a half-hour extension that are optional. If people have to go, they can go. I'm recording the Zoom so they can access the recording and catch up with anything they missed. But who am I to say to stop it in 90? People want more, and if they want more, and some of them it's 1 in the morning in Kenya, or, you know, or 2 in the morning in South Africa, and they're in no hurry to get off. And so you know how it is in church, you know, people looking at their watch, and, you know, because, you know, they wanted to give it so much time, but the folks who are participating on Zoom really want to be there, and I just highly endorse it for you or any of our listeners, whether to participate as students, learners, or as instructors. Now, you touched on eating together, and, you know, and I don't know why this came to my mind, but you and I and 3 or 4 of the other staff had the opportunity to go to New York about 4.5 years ago, and we still say it was one of the finest times we ever had, but you spoke of it and alluded to the relationships, and Helen, in light of, you know, current events with George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and issues, and I'm putting you on the spot, can you talk about the importance of relationships, what role we believe that it can play in healing and racial reconciliation? Just let me throw it to you and just do with it what you want.
Well, thank you, Dr. John. One of the things I shared with someone not too long ago when we were talking about George Floyd and being a mother and a mother of a African-American sons is when the cry for mom or mother was cried, I heard it as well. I think every mother did. I sort of made the reference to when you're at an outdoor event, if a child says mommy or daddy, most parents will turn. Just to see if that child is taken care of, even if it's not your child. Of course, we all recognize our own children. Maybe we turn and maybe we don't. But in that context, I heard it as well. And so when we're talking about this Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, and looking at, we look at our leadership teachings, right, which talks about roles and responsibilities, right? And that thinking, I'm also thinking when you were talking about reaching out across the world for families, when you're encouraging us to do more marriage works, when you're doing your teaching on purpose and reaching other nations, right? Dr. John, when we talk about, oh boy, I'm treading lightly not to get too much into this discussion on Black Lives Matter. I don't want it to turn into that, but I do want to say that there has to be a heart change. If our hearts are changed toward God, then our hearts are right towards each other. Regardless to what that looks like, but if our hearts, see, my heart towards God is I want more of you. That's what makes you stay on for the extra half hour, because you want more of God. You want more. You want to hear about purpose, but you really desire, your soul desires to be more with Him. And so when that happens, you look for ways for the coach to put you in. You prepare yourself for looking for ways to serve, right? Sunday afternoons we're doing meals, or you're going to Dr. John, how many years did I watch you pile up shoes, books, undergarments in the hallways of CUBM so that you could take it to Kenya, even when the process of transporting was not easy or cheap? Most people don't look at the money and said, oh, I can't afford that. So I'm sure that a large percentage of that time your own money went into it. But that's what ministry does. And so I think that for Black Lives Matter and for this whole idea of understanding each other, we're maybe having some argument over issues that we don't understand. If we lean our hearts toward God, right, that He will open up our hearts, and then we can admit to change. I need to change because it's the right thing to do. Right? So.
No, that's great. And I think the more we have relationships, I don't have to think Black Lives Matter when I'm around you and Carla and Carla. Because you're my friends, you're my sisters. I got to bring a black teacher into CUBM. It was you and I had a relationship, and you had gone through the program, and you had paid the price, and you were available, and you were, you know, had a so. I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't need a program. It's a value and a lifestyle that I have lived. And I'm certainly not ignoring the problems that are out there. But for me, getting involved in CUBM, where 90% of the students, sometimes 100%, were African Americans, was the greatest privilege of my life. It was an honor to be there. Maybe I could have made more money someplace else. Maybe it would have been, you know, a little easier to do it. But it would not have been any more meaningful for anyone than what it was for me. And so to have relationships with you and your husband and all, so many of, and I'm so honored too that many of my students and my colleagues support my ministry. And it's not a matter of, well, we got to support a white guy, you know, or it's not a matter of me, well, I need some black donors. It's, we have relationship.
Right.
And
that's right.
And so we could go off to, and I want the leaders to understand, I didn't go with a woman to New York. There were a team of us who went. And, but I was the only white guy, you know, and we would walk the streets and eat and laugh and still look at it as just one of the high times of our lives because it was so special because we were together. And I guess I say, God, how can we bottle that? How can we replicate that? Because Jesus is the answer for the world today.
Yes,
above Him, there's no other. Jesus is the way. And what we've done, what we have, is because of Jesus.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, so.
I mean, as many authors have said, and I just read this the other day, you know, Lord, bind us back together as human beings. Bind us back together as your children. How does that look, and how does this come together?
Is
what you said. You're absolutely right. New York was phenomenal. And let me just say, as you've heard Dr. John say, he was our protection. He really covered the women, because the rest of us were women that were with him, and just everywhere that we went, we felt protected and safe, and so we were able to just have a marvelous time together, and we did.
Yeah, and it's servant leadership of me taking my experience and my knowledge of New York and making it accessible and available to you. And we had beautiful weather, even though it was December, and in 2.5 days, I mean, both days we walked 8-9 miles. And but there was no wasted time. We knew where we were going for eats and for the Knicks game and for the other things that we did and the Rockettes. And so it was, and I just wish, again, we could bottle it and give it away, because you're not going to find that in Washington, D.C., and I'm not criticizing, you know, any movements where legislation is needed for voting and equity. I'm for that. But what I'm really for is what we've described here today. And unfortunately, Helen, we have run out of time. Can you believe we went hour?
I can. So, you and I could always
do this. Yeah. Well, I'm not surprised. Well, God bless you, sister. Thank you for all you're
doing.
And you know we'll stay in touch. And put me in, Coach.
Put me in, Coach. I'm ready to serve. God bless you, Dr.
All right.
John. Love you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Helen Jackson. I told you we'd connect, and you know, it always about 30-minute mark. I think, we're going to run out of time, or we're not going to have enough to talk about. But it always works out. Well, Friday we're going to have Russell Gross, an author with Urban Press, lives up in Providence, Rhode Island, and talk about his experience and his topics of faith and finance. And so, until we're together again, this is John Stanko encouraging you to be about the work of purpose. So long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.